Mini episode 765 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to FDH Lounge mini episode number 765. It's your favorite football talkers in the universe, Rick Morris and Kyle Ross, coming your way to break down NFL Week 5 in 2016 season. Thus far, it's not been a good run, especially for yours truly, I would say. 7-8 last week overall, 28-34-1 on the season. And believe it or not, my numbers overall are actually far superior to some of the rest of them. 1-2 on my big three, tried changing up my methodology, going to plays I didn't like as much. Didn't work. Different week, same results. That was 3-9 now for the year. I am brought to on that. And a true killing field right there on my lock pick, 0-1, 0-4 for the year. Kyle Ross last week, 1-3 for the year, 10-12. So I tried to go sotto voce on those, my man, but I know a bounce back is coming for you.
Yeah, you know, there have been a few things in this league that I've just thrown my hands up and said, what the hell is going on? But at this point of the year, I think it's when you kind of, you do need to make adjustments to what you thought before the year. You need to take things into account. I actually really like this card this week. I haven't been able to say it much. There's a lot of spots to fade the public. I'm doing all of them. Anyone who listens to the show on a regular basis and has seen the betting percentages this week, probably, you know, please listen, because we promised to give you an entertaining 45 minutes of football talk. But they probably know who I'm going to be on this week, and they're right.
One would think so on that. I can probably look at the card and guess those as well. By the way, I could include this in my picks for the year, but not included in my 28-34-1 for the year is a win from last week that I called my Western Bulldogs covering the 10.5 points, winning outright, the first premiership since 1954 in the Australian Football League, the grand final. I know that sports snobs like you, Kyle Ross, want to act like the Super Bowl is head and shoulders above the grand final, but what a spectacular event it was. What a great game. Coach Luke Beveridge, after the game, presenting his championship medal to our injured captain, Bob Murphy. A feel-good moment in front of almost 100,000 people at the Melbourne Cricket Grounds. I was watching it live in the middle of the night Friday night. You know, you can have your Super Bowls, Kyle Ross, when I see a moment like that.
Holy God. You know, everything you just said reminds me of a joke I told my buddy Nick Flasher earlier in the week. If Jill Stein falls in the woods, is anyone there to hear her?
Well, I regret that the Western Bulldogs are not getting the run in this country that they should. 62 years, Kyle Ross. What an incredible accomplishment. Second premiership in team history. Congratulations to one and all with the Western Bulldogs there. A truly, truly great event. Again, what will not be a great event, how's that for a segue, in all likelihood, is the start of this week's slate. First of all, the Thursday games pretty much always suck. We always kind of know that going in. Sloppy football is the norm on Thursday nights in Roger Goodell's world. But we start this week, and again, we'll kind of gloss over the first one as per usual because the show will be going up right around kickoff. By the way, buys this week for Kansas City, Jacksonville, Seattle, and New Orleans. First game of the week, the 1-3 Cardinals, exclamation point, at the 1-3 49ers, 8:25 Eastern Time, Levi's Stadium, Santa Clara, on CBS and the NFL Network. Nance Sims and Wolfson on the call. And this is a game where Arizona is laying 3.5, up from 2.5 initially. It was up to 4. I got to believe that was when people thought it was a little more likely Carson Palmer might play.
Yep.
He will not be playing. It's going to be the infamous Drew Stanton coming in. And, again, had that been the number with Carson Palmer in there, I was really eyeballing it when I thought that might be the case. I'd have been all over the Cardinals. This would have been one of my big recommendations for the week. As it is, I'm still going to be on them, even with the awfulness of Drew Stanton. Cardinals due for a bounce back. I know it's a short week, but I just can't see it. Again, macro picture, I'm going to look at that a few times this week. I just can't see the 49ers at this point with a better record than them. Give me the Cardinals. I don't see it being a field goal game either. I think they'll cover by a little more than that. They're laying the 3.5. I'll take the Cards.
Road favorite Ricky strikes early in the program. I have no opinion on this game. I don't like it at all. You know, I think of all the Thursday night games, it might be my least favorite, which speaks volumes about the kind of football we usually get in this spot, as you so eloquently put out. And, you know, I enjoy all the time we spend together, Ricky, believe it or not.
Yes.
And I can't help but think back to when we were doing our NFC West preview. And we saw that win total for Arizona, how it was kind of low. Remember, wasn't it like 9.5? And we're like, 9.5? Who the hell's going to bet that under? And, well, it's looking like the old bookmakers knew something there. Arizona's in trouble when it comes to the playoffs, I'm telling you right now. But, I could see him win, but I don't do road favorites, so pass.
Well, I'll tell you this. I go back a couple weeks ago. Our fellow Ohio University alum, my good friend Chris Galloway, as he and I were motoring down there to use his season tickets for a game a few weeks ago, I was telling him about how you and I had called this to be a tough year for Arizona, and he kind of glumly says, "You did? I got a ticket on them in Vegas for them to go to the Super Bowl." he actually played the combo of the Cardinals and the Chiefs, which I got to believe would allow him to retire if he actually hit that combo. So,
If he bet it right now and it hit, he could probably retire and give us money for the rest of his life.
Probably.
So
fellow original FDH Lounge dignitary Chris Galloway, get on that. That's your chance of maximizing your
investment. I wouldn't do it, Chris Galloway. Don't do that at all. I don't recommend doing it. I do not recommend. I recommend just setting a $50 bill on fire rather than betting a Cardinals-Chiefs Super Bowl right now.
I think you're probably right about that. On Sunday's games, one of the toughest calls that I have seen probably for the entire year is this first one we're going to get. It's the 3-1 Texans at the 4-0 Vikings. Yeah, because I'm not using the same methodology as last week, this will not be one of my big three. 1 o'clock Eastern Time, U.S. Bank Stadium in Minneapolis on CBS. Spiro Dita, Solomon Wilcox on the call. Minnesota's laying 6.5 up from 6 initially. So this is a thing where, again, you and I are going to be talking a lot this week about regression to the mean, bubbles bursting, whatever. It seems like it's time to come in against the Vikings. It really kind of does. The Texans kind of as well, because I've been saying for a while, I'm not quite as high on them as everybody else is. They're 3-1, so there's still room for that bubble to be burst a little bit. At the end of the day, I keep coming back to this, a little bit of the resistible force and the movable object here with these teams. The Vikings have struggled to kind of run the ball. It's the only thing they've really struggled to do. The Texans
really
struggle with their defensive prowess this year. Yeah, the Texans have been a little soft, at least statistically, against the run. So Minnesota's going to have a little bit more room to operate there than they have coming into this. At the end of the day, I'm going to be on Minnesota at home laying the 6.5.
Wow.
I feel great about it. One of these weeks, somebody's going to come in and probably just blow their doors off and really kind of bring everybody back to earth. I just don't see this being the week, particularly with some of the issues that Houston has had increasingly offensively as the season has gone along, not including, obviously, the running game. But then again, Minnesota's been stout against the run. So, methinks Houston's going to have a little bit even more trouble through the air once the run gets stuffed a few times. Very, very reluctantly, I will be on Minnesota.
I'm going the other way. First recommendation of the week is Houston and the points. I talked about this last week. I was wrong, admittedly. Shame on me. But I'm going back to the well with fading Minnesota, as I completely screwed up that analogy. Well, that was embarrassing. So Minnesota, since the start of last year, 18-3 against the spread. Now, that's insane. Under Mike Zimmer, they are 28-9 against the spread overall. So that goes back 3 years now. But what's really interesting here is Minnesota rarely is the public choice in their games. They have received the majority of the tickets in only 12 of their 37 games. So it's been a situation where the public has been very slow to catch. And by the way, all this information I am liberally stealing from a post on Sports Insight. Thank you very much. I should give them credit.
Okay. All right.
Games where the total is 46 points or less, they're 25-4 against the spread. Total here is really low. It's like you mentioned the keyword of regression. I'm going to call for it here, even though I do not respect Houston's offense at all. I think the Vikings are going to move to 5-0, but in a low-scoring game, a real low-scoring game. Because Minnesota, I think they've scored only 6 offensive touchdowns this year. Oh, by the way,
yeah,
the Texans get into the back door.
Well, because you're making me nervous by citing all those numbers there. You are. But I'll say this. What you said about Minnesota and the offensive touchdowns is literally the only X's and O's related thing you said to justify that. So I'm not as nervous as I might otherwise be.
Okay. Well, here's – all right, let me put a bow on this thing here. I think this is the big exclamation point on the argument. I talked about how – the Vikings are never the public choice, or not never, but only 12 out of 37 times. Well, guess what I'm getting to, Ricky?
They're the public choice.
They are a strong public choice, drawing roughly 80% of the ticket count. That's probably a Zimmer-era high. It just feels like a good time to fade the Vikings, who, by the way, are on a short week, too, we should mention.
True. Yeah, they are, and that's going to play into it as well. You would think. Up next, a real ugly game here, worse than even the records would indicate. I got to tell you, the 1-3 Titans at the 1-3 Dolphins, 1:00 Eastern Time, Hard Rock Stadium at Miami Gardens, Florida, on CBS. Andrew Catalan, Steve Tasker, Steve Berline. And actually, as we're taping this on Thursday, I mean, who's to say where this game is even going to be played necessarily? So we've been hearing some scenarios due to the hurricane. I guess it all depends on what the initial impact is going to be, where this takes place. Miami's laying 3.5. It's been pretty much steady throughout the week here. This is one where, again, you know, I go back and forth on this. I really like a number of the ones this week. I have not been shy about admitting that I don't have much feel for a lot of the games every pretty much week of the season here. But I come back to this, though, that a guy who's been, and I'm going to give USA Today Sports Weekly credit for noting this, you know who's overdue to break out is Delanie Walker. And you know who's got just the secondary where that might happen against Miami. So give me Tennessee in this one, getting the 3.5. They're a live dog, not because they're necessarily so great, but because Miami also sucks. So I'll take the dog here.
Speaking of the dogs barking, we have Bruno here in the back room barking. I don't know what the hell he's going on about, but he's going to leave and go in the backyard for the remainder of the show, pal. Hit the bricks. Okay, now back to football. Why is it every podcast I do that dog freaking ruins everything? Anyway, I am not surprisingly on Tennessee. Well, yeah, I guess so. Surprisingly, I'm not on Tennessee this week. I usually am. I'm just so frustrated by this team. Mariota's regressing. Mike Mularkey, as expected, is an atrocious head coach. They really played Houston pretty tough last week. I watched a good deal of the game because I had them. The game was decided on a punt return. They lost by 7, and the punt return for a touchdown was the difference. I don't know if I see him getting off the mat. Miami's another team that kind of has a lousy spread record. And by the way, we should extend our condolences to anyone in the area here in Miami. Reason I just wouldn't play this game is because of you don't know what it's going to, you know, where if it's going to be played, where it's going to be played. You know, there's with my college handicapping this week in an unrelated story. You know, there's just a number of games I kind of was interested in, but I'm scratching off because I would hate to write them up and you know have something crazy happen. So, and I obviously don't want anything crazy to happen, regardless of my profession. So, pass.
Yeah, I don't blame you on that one. And this is one where, again, with Mike Mularkey, let it be known that this is maybe the first coach in the history of the league whose last name so aptly sums up his own credentials. We move on now to the 3-1 Patriots at the 0-4 Browns, 1:00 Eastern time from I still call it Cleveland Browns Stadium on CBS. Greg Gumbel, Trent Green, Jamie Erdahl on the call. And New England in this game is laying 10.5 up from 9.5 initially. So you and I were talking about this off air, and as we were talking about the ugly dogs, I see where you're going on this one here. And, you know, again, at the risk of being Joe mouth-breathing public here, a game where Belichick is going to be pissed after the last one here, what happened with Buffalo. You got Brady coming in looking for blood against a team where, again, everybody's now, you talk about the bigotry of soft expectations. OMG, the Browns are playing hard. We're going to give this team a medal for finally playing hard after 17 seasons in the league. They're still losing every game. Yeah, they've joked their way into a couple of close covers, whatever. But, again, I see this one being different. Yeah, Hugh Jackson is showing a lot of creative play calling. There's going to be a lot of equalizer effects in there. I don't rule out the chances of the Browns sneaking a backdoor here, as they're known to do. They're one of the worst defenders in the league for that kind of thing. I just don't see it happen here. I realize that every time I say that a team is going to get their doors blown off, it pretty much will go the other way. But that's
yep.
What I see here. I'm weighing the points with the Patriots.
Look, I mean, it's common sense. I think everybody expects New England to come in here and take games, Tom Brady to come back. But I'm not convinced Tom Brady's going to be in midseason form here. For me, it's all about the principle. When I see a line like this, I cover up the team names and just fire. I don't care. But let's talk about a few team-specific trends. Shall we? New England has a road favorite of more than a touchdown, just 1-7 against the number since week 16 of 2012. I guess an arbitrary cutoff point, but rest assured it is a losing record under Belichick overall. And since 2011, there have only been 21 times that a road team has been favored by double digits. They are 8-13 against the spread in that time. Four outright losses, by the way. And it only happened four times all of last year, twice in meaningless Week 17. Look, I know people of your ilk you scoff at participation trophies, and I think that's kind of what you're talking about with the Browns, but they've outgamed their last three opponents. I mean, they were up 20-0 on the Ravens, gave that one away, and didn't cover, by the way. The closing line was 4.5. They did cover against Miami, took them to overtime, should have won that game outright probably at the end. Of regulation. And then last week, they're leading going into the fourth quarter against Washington, three consecutive drives and a turnover. They've been right there. They didn't cover that one either, so they've actually only covered once. I just feel the Browns are just kind of, you know, due to stay within the number here. It's a double-digit dog at home in this league, and I usually take double-digit dogs on the road, regardless of who they are. At home, give me the points. This is a recommendation.
Wow. Okay. All right. Kyle Ross going on the Browns this week. When we talk about ugly dogs, it doesn't get any uglier than that. Up next, a team that, although mediocre, feels like an uglier dog than they probably are, largely because of who they are up against. That, of course, being the Jets, 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 Jets. They are at Pittsburgh, and this is a game 1 o'clock on Sunday, and I am frantically stalling for time as I am trying to turn to the right page here in USA Today Sports Weekly. Here we go. To get the announcers, the 1-3 Jets at the 3-1 Steelers, Heinz Field, CBS, 1 o'clock Sunday. Past lounge guest Ian Eagle, along with Dan Fouts and Evan Washburn, on the call. And in this game, Pittsburgh is laying 7 points up from 6.5 initially. One where I went back and forth. Again, somebody who has been a real turnover machine like Ryan Fitzpatrick, even more so than he has generally through the course of his career. You got to be queasy about him in a situation like this. But, again, I think for Pittsburgh, their secondary, again, when they're not getting turnovers, it has been kind of soft. You have been able to kind of exploit them when they're not getting the picks. You talk about regression to the mean, even somebody like Fitzpatrick is due for a day to stay under 5 picks, right? So give me the Jets in another one where I feel very, very squeamish here, but I'll take them getting the 7 on the road.
I love it. Jets are a recommendation for me this week. Another team that's getting no love from the public whatsoever, not a surprise at all. Basically, as soon as that Sunday night game was over with the Steelers whipping the Chiefs, I was like, oh, public, and I saw who the Steelers were playing next week. I was like, oh, public's going to be all over the Steelers this week, and they are. They're one of the most popular sides. It's a classic situation, kind of like Minnesota, really, in the game we talked about a little bit ago, where you want to fade a team coming off an impressive win on national television. While it doesn't work all the time, I think it works most of the time because the public falls in love with something they just saw. You talk about the turnovers. That's been the story for the Jets. Had they not thrown – Pardon, let's get some toilet paper out of my mouth this week. Had Fitzpatrick not thrown so many picks in the last 2 weeks, you know, it might be a real different story for the Jets. I know the pass rush didn't get home as much as you would have hoped against a suspect Seattle offensive line last week. Pittsburgh's had offensive line issues, too. You talked about the secondary. You know, I haven't been in love with Pittsburgh's defense for some time now. And we're only 2 weeks removed from the Steelers getting embarrassed 34-3 by Philadelphia, remember. So I'm going to take the points. There's some 7.5s out there, too, for you people who have multiple sportsbook accounts.
Exactly. So you always want to chase the best possible number that you can find. Up next, it is the 3-0 Eagles at the 1-3 Lions, 1 o'clock Eastern time from Ford Field on Fox. And USA Today Sports Weekly lists Tom Brenneman and Charles Davis / Chris Spielman. WTF, don't know what that means. Peter Schrager, a great sideline reporter, working this one as well. And this is one
I love how you're so confused by these things.
Yeah, like why do they have two possible guys listed in there? Do you not know as of press time who it's going to be? Get on the ball, USA Today Sports Weekly. You're a great publication overall, but we need to know the announcers, damn it. You got to get this done for us. This is a game where it started as a pick 'em. You'd have to think it was probably the preseason back when this would have been a pick 'em. But it has gone up to Eagles laying 3 points here. And again, in a week where I am sort of grasping for any kind of tactile, you know, thing here, touch and feel on how to get my arms around these games, this is one where, again, you know, I've been bashing on the Lions for a good period of time. And I think justifiably so. I thought the first couple weeks of the season, I go back to one of the few big three picks that I hit was Tennessee over them because I thought it was kind of a ridiculous line there. We've now reached the point where the public has kind of grasped that Detroit's not a very good team. It's almost maybe due to start going back the other way a little bit. And the Eagles, and yeah, they're coming off a bye and everything like this, but I, for one, am still not fully ready to embrace them as a Super Bowl team. I have no X's and O's justification for this whatsoever, except that we get all these weird science's dead results popping up during the season. I think we had a lot of them in September, to be honest with you. I just feel another one right here in my gut. Science is dead. The Lions rise up. They not only cover the 3 points here, I think they might win. No justification, no X's and O's for that whatsoever.
I'm with you. It's funny. I think all my recommendations came late in the program last week. They're all coming here fast and furious early on. The Lions, yep, put a check next to them. Eagles, a shocking 24-5 straight up off a bye since 1993. Wow. But, you know, obviously no one that was on the team in 1993 is playing today, so maybe that doesn't matter so much. What does matter, though, I think, is the Eagles, not very good the last couple of years when asked to lay a field goal or more on the road. You talked about how that line was a pick 'em. I also assume from where you're, you know, that was a preseason line because this line opened 2.5 is what I'm seeing where it opened on Sunday night. But the Eagles, as a road favorite of 3 or more, are an awful, as I bring that up here, I just 1-7 against the spread since 2012. So,
wow.
I'm with you. You talk about the public. You know, yeah, they're off the Lions completely. They've lost outright twice now as favorites in the last 3 weeks. I'm proud to say I went against them both times. You joined me, as you mentioned, when they lost to Tennessee at home. And then last week, I took the Bears, who picked up their first win at the Lions' expense. I just see the Eagles, you know, people are in love with them now. Carson Wentz. It's really been more about Jim Schwartz's defense. I've said that before. It's an anti-public play is what it is. You know, it's not X's and O's, Ricky. Yeah, it's nice to see you're coming a little bit to my side here. It's just anti-public. The Eagles are one of four teams receiving 80% or more of the ticket counts. I have now gone against all four this week. So
just grasping for anything right now, methodology-wise. I'm really, really just grasping to know that I say.
It's just anti-public is what it is. You got to play against the plebeians. So, yeah, New England, who's close to 90% of tickets against the Browns, the Steelers, Minnesota, and Philly all getting overwhelming ticket counts. I'm betting against all of them this week.
If we're playing against the plebeians, then I'm guessing Mr. Bob Backlund is joining us with a large bet on the Lions this week as well. We go to a game up next here that, again, for the for anybody going with the Mark Lawrence / Mark Lawrence, whichever Mark you prefer here, methodology, an unprecedented game in the history of the league with the 1-3 Colts hosting the 1-3 Bears, 1 o'clock Eastern Time, Lucas Oil Stadium on Fox. For whatever reason, the A-team of Buck, Aikman, and Andrews is on this. What is unprecedented about this game? The league has never had a team playing the week after a London game. So clearly they're trying to soften things up here to make playing overseas games the new normal. If they ever do succeed in expanding to 8 games a year, you clearly won't see teams getting the buys all the time, and the Colts are the guinea pig. So I'm looking at this, and again, they are a team that's really just in shambles at this point in time. Not that the Bears aren't in their own way. The Colts are laying 5 up from 4.5 initially. I wanted to go against the Colts for all of these reasons, but it just seemed like it might be too easy and too obvious of a pick. The Colts are a bad enough team at this point in time. I think you start looking at games. I'm used to this as a Browns fan every year. You circle games on the schedule the rest of the way. What are the winnable games? I don't think that list is nearly as long for Indianapolis as anybody would have thought at the beginning of the year. And you and I were kind of fading the Colts a little bit more than some people were. So I'm going to be on the Colts for this one here just because, again, grasping for methodology here at this point, I think it's too easy to go against them. I'll take the Colts laying the 5, even though I'm not sure they're 5 points better than Slippery Rock College at this point.
You kind of detailed an interesting pivot there by you. You really made a case to go against the Colts, and then you went with them. I'm certainly not going to endorse the Colts for the reasons you laid out, but I'll add a reason not to go for the Bears. I just alluded to it, as a matter of fact. They're off a win. Bad teams often win. No thanks. I'll be looking to take the Bears as home dogs moving forward, but yeah, not at this short price.
Yeah, even with the home field the road field advantage that the Bears always seem to have. Yeah, that's something to take into account and then discard immediately after you've done so. Up next, we have the 3-1 Falcons at the 4-0 Broncos. Didn't think we'd be reading off those records at the beginning of the year. 4:05 Eastern Time from Mile High on CBS. Chris Myers, John Lynch, and the delicious Pam Oliver on this game. Denver is laying 5.5 points down from 6 initially, so it's in that no man's land that you often speak of vis-a-vis the point spreads here. Again, when I talk about the games this week that are just so brutally, brutally different, I'm whining about that with every game on how hard it is, but this is another one. I'm just whining about it. It's so difficult to try to get my arms around this because, again, both teams at this point really feel like they're due to regress. I can't tell you who I think would necessarily be the case more, but with this quarterback situation there in Denver, you just get to the point of when does it get to be from the ridiculous into the sublime of where this team can overcome any type of situation at quarterback. And with Matt Ryan out there, again, he's not going to do to the Denver defense what he's done to some of the lesser lights in the league, but Denver's going to have to keep up in this one. I think they'll be able to at least keep up. I don't think they're going to cover. They may very well win, but give me Atlanta getting the 5.5.
This is a really hard game to call. Strength on strength of that Atlanta offense against the Denver defense. But
yep.
I would caution anyone backing Atlanta to realize the 3 teams they've beaten, all suspect defenses. Oakland and New Orleans, their defenses both stink. And then, you know, Carolina, you know, a secondary that we had kind of maligned in previous years, even when the team was winning, you know, obviously no Josh Norman there. I don't know what in the blue hell Ron Rivera was calling last week, going for single coverage on Julio Jones. That was one of the most disastrous game plans I've seen in recent years. I'm just passing here. These are 2 teams that have clearly exceeded my expectations for them. And, you know, whoever wins is going to obviously continue to do so. So, I don't know.
You got to think so.
Yeah, the bottom line here is, man, Denver is for real. As long as they got that defense, man, they're legit. It's tough. So, I don't know.
They are. They proved it last year. They made it to the Super Bowl on mostly defense and will look to do so again. Up next, you talk about teams where the records are surprising. This is another one, particularly with the home team. It's the 2-2 Bills at the 3-1 Rams, ? 4:25 Eastern Time from the Los Angeles Memorial Coliseum on CBS. Kevin Harlan, Rich Gannon, Scott Kaplan watching this one and calling it. And this is one where, again, you've got the short home favorite here, Rams -2, had been 2.5 initially. This is one where, again, on a week where I'm struggling to get a grasp of the 2 teams here, it's the Rams that, again, and you're the guy that goes inside the advanced statistics. You're the guy that does a lot of that kind of stuff. The Rams are really kind of, they're so short of a 3-1 record by so many of the statistical measures right now. They've been so lucky to get there at this point. I don't see any way in the, going back to, again, the blue hell, that the Rams end up 4-1. Give me Buffalo to cover in this one and by logic to win covering the 2 points.
Yeah, the Rams are 3-1, but have a negative point differential of minus 13. That's still owed to that 28-0 loss to the 49ers in week one. Remember, now maybe they do a Minnesota Vikings from last year where they lose the head scratcher in San Francisco on the late Monday nighter in week one, and then they just kind of play above their heads the rest of the way. I don't know. But I look at this Rams team compared to that Vikings team from last year, and they don't measure up. This is not a good football team. I think Football Outsiders, you talk about advanced statistics, no one does it better than them when it comes to the NFL. I think they have the Rams 24th in DVOA right now. So point differential is obviously tied in there with DVOA. So this clearly falls short of a 3-1 team. You look at it, they beat Seattle without scoring an offensive touchdown last week. I believe it was a special teams touchdown was the difference against Arizona, a game that Carson Palmer was knocked out. And Jeff Fisher seems to be celebrating that a little bit. An absolutely disgraceful act by a disgraceful head coach. I'd like to add that right now. And then what was the Rams' other win? Yep, the mustache tool. What was the Rams' other win? Oh, Tampa Bay.
The other one.
Who stinks?
Yeah, Tampa Bay.
It was Tampa Bay. Who stinks?
Yeah.
It was a high-scoring game, and there was like a weather delay. So the better team is getting points here, bottom line. Bills have like a plus 19-point differential, which is pretty good if you're 2-2. Just shut out the Patriots. I know it was a third-string quarterback and a rookie at that that they faced. But, it's funny with me, Rick. You know me. I don't fight and cling to the bitter end with things that I liked at first. I'm first usually to turn on them, as a matter of fact. And I kind of did that with the Bills at 0-2. But here they are at 2-2, and I'm kind of like, oh, you know what? I thought this was a playoff contender at the start of the year. Yeah, let's go with them. Recommendation.
I was with you all along, fellas. I was with you all along.
You know, Rex Ryan, I've never said a bad word about you in my career. You know, let's take him.
Yeah. Rex Ryan, agony of defeat, if you will. But up next, it is the... It's the Sunday nighter. Up next, it's the 2-2 Giants at the 2-1 Packers, 8:30 Eastern Time, Lambeau Field in Green Bay on NBC. Michaels, Collinsworth, Tafoya on the call. Green Bay is laying 7 points in this one, up from 6.5 initially. And again, wouldn't be the first time that Green Bay hosted the Giants in a game where they were overwhelmingly expected to win. You go back, quite frankly, to the Giants' last two Super Bowl wins, and they included big upsets at Lambeau Field here. So a real revenge spot for the Packers. Notwithstanding that, again, there's a lot of turmoil on the Giants' side. There's a lot of things that are going wrong right now. ODB, there's word that he might even get sat this week. A lot of things are kind of going against them. Short week, although that's somewhat negated by playing at night instead of the afternoon to a tiny degree. But again, a gut feeling. I just can't help but feel like I've seen this too many times before. Never take the Giants for granted when they're going into Lambeau Field with Eli Manning. They're going to backdoor this one. I don't think they're going to win, but they're going to get underneath the 7.
How's this for a reason not to play a game, Rick Morris? I want to watch No Mercy, so I'm not playing this game.
Well, the town hall debate on Sunday night as well. I'll be going split screen.
Okay, yeah. I'm going to watch No Mercy. You know, it's a good number at 7. You know, usually I would want to buy low on a stock like the Giants, who everyone's been ripping all week. But going into Lambeau against a rested team that I respect is, I don't know if this is the spot. The Giants, it's going south.
Yeah.
It looks so good. It looks so good with two close wins to start the year. It looked like the math would be in their favor this year, but, you know, arguably the most schizophrenic franchise in the league over the last 5 or 6 years is ever so schizophrenic again.
Well, I'll tell you what, it's a nice segue from that to Monday night where two of Sybil's favorite teams are playing, because you talk about trying to get a handle on these guys from week to week. The 1-3 Bucks at the 1-3 Panthers, 8:30 Eastern Time, Bank of America Stadium in Charlotte on ESPN. Again, this is, as is the case with some games this weekend in college and pro, weather permitting, as we're recording this on a Thursday, so we don't know what the path of the hurricane is going to be. But it's slated for Monday night in Charlotte. McDonough, Gruden, Salters, the team calling it on ESPN from Obama bailed out Bank of America Stadium. And this is one where, again, you're going to abuse me for this, that I'm going to even cite a line on this, but it was Carolina laying 6
for the
open.
Team.
I'm going to call it Carolina minus 6. I'm going to go with that. Carolina will be going with the infamous Derek Anderson at quarterback here in light of Cam Newton. Why is Vegas being a bunch of gold brickers right now, refusing to take a stand when we already know that it's Derek Anderson that's going to be playing? They're just doing this to piss me off. They're just doing this
I hope they are, because you're demanding that there be a line for every game when we do the show. It's so bizarre.
It's my one time back like an entitled millennial, Kyle Ross. I'm channeling my inner entitled millennial.
I just don't understand. Like, just fucking pass, man.
I will not pass. As a matter of fact, I'm taking Tampa Bay in this one here, largely out of contempt for Derek Anderson. Carolina is due for a turnaround. I could see it being this game, if not for D.A., who is one of the most mistake-prone quarterbacks in the league. That's why somebody with his outstanding arm remains a clipboard holder no matter where he goes. Tampa Bay will get inside the number on this one.
Pass. There's no real number. You can't bet this game, people.
You keep coming back to that for some reason. Okay, all right. So now we go to my big three, which, again, as I was saying last week, folks, especially I'd say on my big three and my lock picks, time to start doubling down, people, on what you would be betting on these ones here, because regression to the mean is coming, or progression to the mean in this case here. They're going to start hitting, and we start with a game here. It's the battle of the beltway, as it were. It's the 2-2 Redskins at the 3-1. Ravens, 1 o'clock Eastern time, M&T Bank Stadium in Baltimore on Fox. Five-time lounge guest Kenny Albert on the call with Daryl Moose Johnston and the lovely Tandora Oakland. This is one where Baltimore has been laying a flat 4 points all week. And in looking at this game here, there's a lot of people, I think there's a lot of sentiment towards, OMG, the Redskins are starting to turn it around again, everybody. But, you know, I have been a little bit less, obviously, impressed with what they've been doing than with what everyone else has been seeing here at this point. And I, like you, I'm not buying the Kirk Cousins. I'm not. I'm with you on that one here. And the Ravens, at least in terms of passing yardage, have been kind of a difficult defense to go up against here at this point. So I look for continued struggles out of Kirk Cousins in this game here. Ravens to win and cover the 4 points, even though, again, I've been saying I think there's a little bit of a Ravens bubble, and it's only going to get bigger after they go to 4-1. But for this week, I'm on them. It's a recommended play.
I like them to win the game. I would do a teaser here, side and total, and go Ravens under. Tease the total up, tease the Ravens, do a dog, and play it that way, if you're interested, is my approach.
Okay. That sounds pretty logical. I think it's probably a lower risk way to go. And that's what we're trying to do. Absolutely, help people manage their risk. The next of my big three picks here, the old AFL battle of the 1-3 Chargers at the 3-1 Raiders, 4:25 Eastern Time, Oakland Alameda County Coliseum on CBS. Tom McCarthy, Adam Archuleta on the call, and this is one where Oakland is laying 3.5 up from the 3 initially. A team that, again, I'm going to take issue with what you said on Facebook about feeling sorry for Philip Rivers. I don't, because, you know what, these are team chokes here. And if he had them in a better position in the fourth quarter, maybe they still would have been ahead enough here. So I don't exempt him. This is a choking dog of a team. But at this point in time, these Oakland-San Diego games have been unpredictable in years past. Now, more times than not, it's been me being on the Chargers and the Raiders rise up. But this is a game where every time you feel like you know the answers going into a Raiders-Chargers game, they change the questions. I'm looking for more of the same. It's my Roddy Piper special of the week here. I am taking the road dog. Boy, I'm mixing my wrestling analogies here. Taking the road dog, getting the 3.5 points in this one.
Yeah, this is my sixth and final recommendation of the week. It is also my last stand with the Chargers. If they don't do it here, then I give up. They have held a double digit lead in the fourth quarter 3 times this year. They have lost 2 of those games. They also blew one to the Colts. Last week was the worst. Philip Rivers, see, this is why I feel bad for Philip Rivers. When I type that, he's facing a 3rd and 25
he hits the receiver right in the chest, who's somehow open for first down, and the guy lets it bounce off. That's after his idiot players fumble twice.
What was the level of torque and English on that pass, though, Kyle Ross? That's what I would question. Was
it
thrown a little too hard, perhaps?
No. You know how they say a quarterback's supposed to hit you right between the numbers?
Yeah.
He hit him right between the fucking numbers. Okay? He hit him right between the fucking numbers. It was horrible. And by the way, the Chargers in 4 weeks have lost four starters with season-ending injuries. Everything I said at the start of the year how this team's luck was going to go better was a goddamn lie. I'm so sorry. I'm sick to my stomach. It pisses me off. And goddamn it, San Diego, you better win this week.
They lost four starters in 4 weeks. Good thing it's not a 22-week season, huh?
Yeah.
All right. We come to, although 16 weeks at that pace would be bad enough, I think. We come to my 1,000-star gold-plated Wacken Millennium for NFL Week 5. It's the 2-2 Bengals at the 3-1 Cowboys, 4:25 Eastern Time from AT&T Stadium in Arlington on CBS. Nance Sims-Wolfson on the call. This is a game that had started as a pick'em. Cincinnati has now risen to -2. And quite frankly, earlier in the week when I was making this call, it was when it was still a pick. I'm going to stick with it at the -2. And again, it's more at this point, I would say, macro level in looking at these teams. I have a hard time envisioning Dallas as being a 4-1 team. And the Bengals have been a team that, again, they have had the difficulty in terms of the schedule early on here and some things where, again, people are kind of losing faith in them a little bit. I don't think they're as bad as they've looked. I think particularly when you look at something like the running game, Hill and Bernard haven't lost it the way that people are thinking that they have. It's a cyclical kind of a thing here. They're going to start to look better. It's not necessarily going to be easy to start to look better in that sense against the Cowboys, but the Bengals, you talk about regression, progression of the mean, whatever the case may be, they seem like a team that's due for some of it. Give me the Bengals laying the 2 points here at Dallas.
Ooh, what a odd game to have as your big play this week. This, to me, is the hardest call on the board. Like,
really?
It's funny. You and I have kind of taken off. So yeah. I guess I just have more regard for Dallas than you do. I can't –
okay.
You know, I think the line's about fair. And I want no part of this game at all. I mean, this one in Atlanta, you know, you said, oh, this game's real hard about a lot of them. I kind of had a good feel on more of them than I usually do, I guess. But – at least out of principle, but you know, this one and that Atlanta Denver game just were the two no thanks for me this week.
Well, short road favorites. I know you're always leery of games where that's the case,
yeah.
But your picks for this week: Cleveland, the Jets, Detroit, San Diego. Who am I missing here? Oh, Houston, right? Am I missing anybody
else?
And Buffalo. Okay, didn't have that one written down. That's right. My three picks are Baltimore, San Diego, I wince as I'm saying that, and Cincinnati, Cincinnati being my lock of the week. So we shall see how NFL Week 5 plays out. It's been a fitful schedule thus far, but things do to turn around big time, Kyle Ross. I know this in our heart of hearts, and if people load up on their picks, they'll probably be able to retire on Monday. Wouldn't you agree?
I agree. I'm going 6-0 this week. I'm calling it right now.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Back in the high life again, my friend. We'll be there by the time we go to discuss NFL Week 6 next week. But in the meantime, thank you, everybody, for listening. Thank you, Kyle Ross, for being a part of it, as always. We'll catch you next week breaking down Week 6.
As we bring the show to a close, we would like to extend our deepest gratitude to NBC, CBS, ABC, Fox, all Clear Channel affiliates, TNT, TBS, USA, UPN, Deadspin.com, YouTube.com, YTMND.com, MySpace.com, various blogs, Fox News, CNN, CNBC, MSNBC, IamBored.com, Billboard.com, Google.com, ESPN, ESPN2, ESPN News, ESPN Classic, NBA TV, NFL Network, Sports Time Ohio, Athlon Magazine, Comedy Central, Cartoon Network, The Boomerang Channel, QVC, BET, The Spice Channel, Steno Notebooks, Manwich, Papermate Office Supplies, Waitresses, Strippers, Bartenders, Garbage Men, Janitors, Microwave Popcorn, The Writers of The Office, Scrubs, Entourage, My Name is Earl, Oz, Metalocalypse and the Boondocks, Aquafina, and The Periodic Table of Elements.